This is an interview with Minnie Shittum in April 3rd, 2003 in El Paso, Texas. The interviewer is Fernanda Carrillo. This interview is part of the Bracero Oral History Project. Good afternoon, ma'am.
Good afternoon.
What is your full name, ma'am?
Minerva Christine Ann Cheatham.
And when and where were you born, ma'am?
I was born in El Paso. At the old Providence Hospital, which is now under the freeway.
And did you grow up here?
I grew up in Clint.
In Clint?
I lived in El Paso for 48 days, and my mother died in. So
only 40.
In Sunset Heights. You know where the Sunset Grocery is?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh,
my parents lived in the apartments.
In the apartment.
Third floor, Sunset Grocery.
And you live only there for 48 days, and then you...
And then I lived in a nursery for 6 months. And then from there, they brought me here to Clint, to my paternal grandparents.
Oh, your grandparents live here.
And they were supposed to... I was supposed to stay here for... until my dad remarried. And my father remarried and 9 years later moved to California and I stayed.
You stayed?
I stayed with my grandparents.
Okay. And what schools did you attend during that time? Schools here? What schools did you...
I went to Clint School.
To Clint School?
Yeah. Graduated from Clint High School.
And college? Where?
I went to UTEP.
To UTEP?
Mm-hmm.
Did you graduate?
It was Texas Western College.
It was Texas.
First, it was Texas Western College, and then I went to it again, but it was already UTEP. So, but I didn't graduate. I just attended it.
For how many years did you...
2 years.
2 years. Mm-hmm. And what were you planning to study?
I was trying to go for business, mm-hmm. and then I changed my major to linguistics, and then... I didn't finish that, and so I'm thinking of going back and taking maybe a course in management or in business.
That will be great. And when did you start to work at the Rio Vista Center?
When I graduated from high school, mm-hmm. I was going on to college, and due to certain circumstances that my grandparents were going to move to El Paso, so I would be close to college. Would be close to college. And I did not want them to sell their home because they were both used to be living in the country and city life was just not for them.
Yes.
So a cousin of mine told me, she said, they have job openings at Rio Vista as a temporary employee.
Yes.
And so I went and applied and I got the job as a clerk typist.
Oh, how old were you at the time, ma'am?
I was 18.
You were 18 years. Great. So you applied and... Was it a part-time job?
It's a WAE, what they call whenever needed or whatever we call it. Yeah.
And during what period of the year?
I started in August,
mm-hmm.
August of 57.
And for how many years did you work?
I worked on and off till 1962. Because they closed up in 1960, either 63 or 64 was the last year that they contracted the site.
Okay.
But they had been contracting them since the 40s.
Since the 40s. So you started...
I'm not quite sure, but I know that my grandfather had a farm, and he had braceros, and I think he had them contracted. Because they got them from the El Paso Valley... El Paso Valley... thought about it yesterday, and Cotton Association,
mm-hmm.
Paso Valley Farmers, Paso Valley something it was,
mm-hmm.
and they would see what happens is when they would bring the braceros in and they went through the process, then they would have them in the camp area,
yeah.
and then farmer groups would come in like from Pecos, and it was an organization, like the Pecos Association or Farmers Association, I don't remember what the names exactly were, but they would bring them in, and they would call in the microphone and say, on the PA system, and they would say, we need so many men for Pecos, okay. We need so many men for El Paso Valley, we need so many men for the Holly Sugar in Colorado,
yes.
and all these men would go over there, and there would be people from that association that they would choose their people. They say, okay, we want you. And
okay.
then they would go through the contracting process, and then they would by that time they would get into the buses and everything, but they would be contracted to wherever they were. They were told that they were going to go. So that's when we did the contract.
The contractors. Mm-hmm. Would you please describe your role as a clerk typist in the...
As a clerk typist? Mm-hmm. What we did there in that department... Well, let me tell you a little bit what they started, what I understand that they started. They came in and they were... they would put a powder there because a lot of them had, you know, they had traveled so much. They had the fleas or whatever, you know, and you know how they travel.
Yes.
Anyway, they would spray them, and then from there they would go into public health. They would get a blood test, and they would get an X-ray. From there, they would go on and would get fingerprinted.
Yes.
And then they would have their pictures taken. And from there, then they would go to contracting, what we would do is we'd take the paperwork that they had. 345, which was what I was telling you about.
Yes, could you please describe what the 345 was?
The 345, I understand, was a permit that they would give them from Mexico. They would give it to them in Chihuahua so they could cross the border and come to work. And then once they had that, they were here at the center. And when we got to contracting, we'd take the 345, we'd take the paperwork and whatever information they had. And what we would do is we would type the contract, which would say, their name and their beneficiary and who their wife was, because sometimes the beneficiary and the wife was not the same.
Was not the same person.
Not the same. And a lot of times what they would do is a lot of them would buy their 345s in Mexico.
Oh, okay.
And a lot of times I would get, you know, it was unusual. If somebody else would get one, I'd get the other one. It would be all right. You know?
Yes.
I mean, they would later catch on. But sometimes I would get them, and I'd say, what is your name? And I'd get them, and I'd type it and everything, and then maybe two or three guys would come through, and then I'd say, what's your name? And he'd give me the same name as the one I had just gotten.
Uh-huh.
And I'd say, wait a minute. And I'd say, okay, who's your wife? And sometimes they wouldn't even think about it. They'd be one right after the other.
Okay.
And they would say, who's your wife? Well, so-and-so. And who are your parents? And they were exactly the same. When were you born? And, you know,
exactly.
We had that information written, you know,
yes,
in their paper. But we had to ask them all that information. And then I would end up like, okay, you know. And I'd go like, wait a minute, you know, they're exactly, which is the right
exactly.
one? Which is the original one? Which is the one that bought the paper, you know, there? And I would, you know, notify immigration, or immigration would find out, and they would ask them, you know, which is which. Sometimes they would let the original, the one that would really was, you know, let him go through. Sometimes they would deport both of them.
Oh,
and
okay.
That's what the risk that they would take, you know, they would just do that. But once they got through us, through the contracting,
mm-hmm.
Through the typing and everything, then they would go to another department, which was also in contracting, have their papers separated and filed, and then from there they would go to immigration. And immigration would process them with their paperwork. And from there, that was it. They would go to transportation, where they would go be transported in the buses to wherever they were going to go.
To the places they were going to work.
Wherever they were assigned to.
I have a question. You said, was it the 345 permit the only kind of identification you asked for?
That was what we asked for, but they usually had
other
paperwork with them. But mostly it was the 345 that we would get the information from. Once
that
they had that taken care of, that's what told us, you know, more or less what all the information that we needed. And of course they had gone through other processes, so they had some paperwork.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But mostly that.
Was the screening process done inside a building?
Yes, they were done inside the buildings. You know how revistas done in a series of buildings, like a horseshoe?
Yes.
Okay, they would start, as you're facing it, they would start on the right side, and they would go into the building on the right,
okay.
And they would start processing them, and they would go completely around as a horseshoe. The last building on the right, on this side, on the right side, or as you're looking at it, on the left side, would be the transportation.
Okay.
And by that time, when they did not go through that building, but they would be processed at transportation, and they would be told which buses they would ride.
And did all the whole process took like a day?
It took... No, not a day. It would take maybe an hour for them to go through, completely an hour and a half maybe to go through. But of course, you know, once they got all the paperwork done and they were there at the camp, they would call them and see which ones were going where, and
okay.
then they would load them in the buses.
And sometimes, did it ever happen that some of them had to stay to pass the night right there at the Rio Vista?
Well, yes, there were times when they spent a week without being contracted.
Oh, okay.
Because what they had is they all wanted to go to Holly Sugar in Colorado. because they paid very good.
Oh.
Pecos was the one that paid the least. So nobody wanted
really? To nobody Pecos. Liked Pecos?
They wanted to, they had to raise cantaloupes. That's what they brought, the cantaloupe. And their pay was very low there in Pecos. So nobody wanted to go. And they said, you know, we need 150 men for Pecos. You get a few men that didn't, hadn't been there, that were not experienced.
Okay.
You get just a
so they say, we'll go.
You know, and they had to really kind of push the people to go. But when they said Holly Sugar, everybody ran up there. You know, you could see the whole camp. I said, oh, they're contracting for Holly Sugar, because you could see them all running up there. They had a place there also in the middle. Well, not in the middle, but in the, at the end.
Yes.
Where they have the food. They would serve them 3 meals a day.
They serve them food right there.
They fed them 3 meals a day. And when they were leaving, they would give them a sack lunch.
Okay.
But most of them would eat it before the buses
before
left. The buses would leave, and you'd see all the little bags of chips and the bags of the food, you know, the empty bags, you know, out there. You say, God, they didn't even leave the camp before they ate their lunch.
And what about the employees that you work there? Were you able to eat at the same place, or do you have?
We could eat there, but we usually took our lunch.
Okay.
We usually took our side lunch there. Or we used to go out to eat. We used to go from there to Carmen's Cafe in Isleta.
Okay.
And we had an hour for lunch, and it's terrible because we used to get 5 or 6 or 7 girls in each car and take off and go to Carmen's Cafe. We had already called our orders in, so by the time we got there, everything
was ready.
So, you know, we just eat, gobble our food, and get back.
And get back.
But most of the time, it was best, you know, to take your lunch. But we'd get, you know, okay. Real.
Was it only girls that work as clerk typists there?
No, it was girls and men. There was there were a lot of men that worked in there, but mostly it was the girls at contracting.
Okay.
And most of it was girls doing the typist, the clerk typist work and everything. Of course, our supervisors were mostly retired military that had gotten jobs with the government. They had they tried to encourage me to get a job with the government, to file, you know, to apply for a, or to go take the test.
Yes.
For a full-time job with the government. I just procrastinated. I said, no, I don't think I want to stay. Because I felt that they would send me not to work there, because it was a temporary job.
Okay.
And they would send me to work at Fort Bliss or White Sands and all that. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't want to go, you know, away from home. That far away. To work. Mm-hmm. And I worked there in 57, 58, and then 59, I went to work for a doctor. And 60, I got married in 60. So I worked there in 60, and 61. And with the children, you know, and it was good because you worked so many months on and so many months off.
Yeah.
I was one of the fortunate ones that when I started working there, it's only a 6 weeks job.
Oh, okay.
And that was it. But I was one of the lucky ones that stayed, because when they come back, we have to reprocess them as they come back, so that they can go back to Mexico. In other words, we have to account for all the people that left.
Okay, okay. Not only on their way in the country, but also in the...
Yeah, because we had an office there for the consul, the Mexican consul, and his vice consuls. And of course, we had the offices there for, you know, the head offices for the contracting. But we had to make sure account for the people that had gone. We had to make sure if they hadn't gotten hurt in the hospitals, or gotten killed or something, you know, first those... they were accounted for. But we had to account for the people that left and make sure that the people that left came back. Were returned to Mexico. It was a contract that they had because of the... I understand that when they started in the 40s was because of the lack of the people to work in the fields here. And like I said, my grandfather had a few.
Had a
when
few
I, when I was in school. So that was when I was in junior high school. That they started was in the 40s.
Uh-huh. And do you remember some of them working at your grandfather's farm?
Oh, yes, I remember. I remember them working there, and I remember that one of them broke his foot, and he couldn't work there for a while, and then he went back to Mexico. And it was a loss for the farmer, because the farmer could say nothing. If the man went back to Mexico, he'd go have to pay again and contract another person. In other words, the farmer would lose what he had paid.
And what about the bracero that got injured? How did he get back to Mexico?
He got back to Mexico through the government. The United States had insurance on all of them.
So okay.
The farmers all had insurance on the workers. So anytime that they got hurt, they were taken care of completely. They had to have the government, Mexico, asked the United States that they had to have good housing for them, and they had inside plumbing, which a lot of families here in the town did not have inside plumbing, but all the braceros were supposed to have inside plumbing. They had to have a good home, and they had to have something that was, you know, pretty decent, nothing that they would be staying, you know, outside in a barn or anything. Okay. Their homes had to be, you know,
good living conditions.
Good living conditions, and they had to make sure that they had plenty of food, and they had, you know, if they got hurt, they had hospitalization and whatever they needed.
And you say most of them were insured, and was there an insurance company at the Rio Vista Center, or how did they?
I think it was through the each organization had an insurance.
Okay.
Because I'm sure that the Rio Vista did too, but like I said, it was through the government, through the Mexican government, and we did have a consul there who was, you know, always watching and looking out for their, for his people, for the Mexican people.
Okay, so he was able to be present at any, you know, a state of process?
Anything that happened, you know, he was right there. What was his name? Rusek was his name.
Rusek.
He was, I guess he was, I don't remember what kind of nationality he was, but he was, he was Mexican.
He was Mexican.
Rusek.
Okay. And you said you only worked there for a certain period of time during the year?
Yes.
But did the center operate year-round?
In a way, it did. They had a skeleton crew when they worked. When they brought in a few people, and they had a few people coming and going, but most of the time, it was when they would hire the girls to work or the men to work, was when, you know, the crops were...
Okay, the beginning of the...
Yeah, that's when they would hire all these people, and then they would bring them back in between while they were working.
Yes.
Most of the girls were laid off. I was one of the lucky ones that stayed and was able to do filing and whatever we had to do in between.
Yes.
And then when they came back, they would call them back, because then they would have a load of them back and trying to process them back in. And it was just the same thing, you know, year round. It was like different crops at different times. So they would have different, you know, different periods of work.
And when were the busiest times for the Rio Vista?
For the area there, I think August to maybe September.
Okay.
Because that's when the cotton was here. And I don't remember when Holly Sugar was, but they had, when they pick up the beets in Colorado.
Okay.
So that was a very busy time.
So mostly for the area was in the cotton? And then also Holy Sugar, you mentioned the beets. Any other crop that you remember that it was?
No, I don't remember. I know it's the Pecos Valley, the El Paso Valley. I think it was Cotton Association. Paso Valley. No, Cotton Association. Paso Valley. They used to be right there on Alameda. Right now, I think they have a school there that they did, where they had it.
The offices of the...
I can't remember exactly what the name of it was, but I knew it was El Paso Valley Farmers. I can't remember exactly what. Mr. Tellez was the one that was used to go out and contract the people there. But, when you need to remember these names, they evade you. And last night I was thinking of all these names. And
yeah, that happens quite often. And how many applicants will you say were there on a day? Let's say an average number.
To apply for a job? Or?
I mean, to get through the process and to...
To the process? Well, they would bring them. Sometimes they would bring 200, 300, 400. We'd had up to 500 people there at one time. Sometimes maybe even more. And they were coming in. Some of them were leaving. Sometimes that camp was full. And it was so funny, because when they came in, a lot of them came in from Oaxaca and different places like that, and they come in with their white clothes, you know, the typical clothes.
Yes.
And they come in with guariachis or the sandals, you know, the open sandals. And I mean, their feet were from walking, and, you know, they used to walk miles from Mexico, from deep inside of Mexico, when they couldn't take a bus or something. And, and they would travel for months, you know, to make it to where they were coming.
Yes.
So it was strange, because you see their feet, and, you know, they were so, I mean, their feet were just, you know, from traveling, they were just all ruined and everything. You could see the damages on their feet and everything else. And then they come back, they go to work, and they come back. And the camp was real quiet when they leave, you know, I mean, you could hear them talking and everything else.
Yes.
But when they came back, I think every one of them had bought a radio.
Oh!
And they all had them at a different station. So the camp, you could hear the whole camp. You
it
know,
was
the
very
radios
nice.
On at night. The radios were on. They all had bought sewing machines. I don't know why. They all bought sewing machines.
Really? And so they can take them back to their...
bicycles. That's what they bought. Sewing machines. Radios, sewing machines, and bicycles.
And bicycles.
And cowboy boots. They were all wearing, you know, most of them were wearing boots,
yeah.
The jeans, and, you know, the Western shirt and everything else. And you'd look at them and you'd go, these are the same ones that I processed going while they're coming back. And look at the way they're dressed. You know, their dress was
their dress was so different. And what about their attitude? Were they more open?
Their attitudes
open?
Were a little different. They were a little, you know, they were kind of a little prouder, you know. At first they'd come in real shy and everything. And then when they went back, they were so proud because they had something to take with them.
That's good.
But it was strange because I used to see sewing machines on top of the buses when they were taking them back to the bridges, and the top of the buses were all covered with sewing machines standing with their legs up, you know, all you see is the legs up of the sewing machines,
yes.
You know, they were taking them back.
So it was a very common thing that they had sewing machines.
Yes, sewing machines, I don't know. I guess everybody, all the ladies used to know how to sew in Mexico because they used to buy sewing machines and bicycles. That was one thing that they loved, was bicycles, sewing machines, and radios. And I remember that sometimes in the afternoon, you know, when sometimes we'd work late or whatever.
Yes.
And sometimes we'd hear those radios going on, you know, with a different station, whatever. My ex-husband used to work there as a guard, and
yes.
He'd work night duty. And sometimes I'd go there with him or something, or take him lunch or something, and you could hear the camp at night. And all you would hear is the radios, all in different stations. You know, here it is midnight, and all the radios were going in different stations. And they'd lay down there in the camp, you know, and sleep there.
Yeah.
They had cots, they had places where they could sleep, but they decided to sleep
to
there.
Sleep in
the... Sleep there, you know, all around the camp there, so
the
camp. They could have all the radios.
All the radios.
And by that time, you know, when they left here, they had a little bag, you know, maybe a little cloth bag with their belongings, which was nothing but maybe a little bag, I'd say about maybe 8 inches or whatever. And they'd come back with suitcases and all these bags, and you know, they loved to buy those shiny suitcases that they had.
Oh,
the metal cases.
Yes.
Oh, they loved to buy those. I mean, the shinier, the better.
The better.
So they'd have them there, and they'd have all these, you know, clothes or whatever they had bought, and they would lie down there. They had their pillows and everything,
yeah.
And you'd go, wow. Blankets. They bought a lot of blankets.
So usually on the way, in the country, they only have like small bags, and but they were able to keep their belongings.
Very minimum, whatever they had, you know. And of course, they were, like I said, they were very, very poor people. There was several in there that were doing it, college students,
mm-hmm.
and writers, book writers, that would come in through it so that they could write about the history of the story.
Yes.
And a lot of college students, so they could experience what the braceros would experience.
But of course, Mexican college students,
yes,
right?
Uh-huh. Okay. And you could see them, and you could tell, you know, that you can tell right away the difference in the people.
Yes, they look different.
Are you a student or something? And they say, yes, how can you tell? Because of the way your demeanor is different. And, you know, most of the people from Oaxaca speak their own language, their own dialect. And you begin to, at first, you would have seen me, I was a disaster, trying to learn to listen to what they were trying to tell me
yes.
in their own, not in their dialect, but not in their language, but in a dialect that they use, you know, to understand themselves.
Oh,
in
Mexico. Okay.
And they had that little sound on it, and I couldn't understand what they were trying to say, you know, and it was difficult. And then after a while, you pick up their little,
yeah.
you know, their little
yes.
sound, and you then you begin to understand them.
They understand what they say.
And I was very fortunate because I was raised by my grandparents, and they were from deep interior Mexico. My grandfather was from Jalisco, and
okay.
I learned fluent Spanish. So to me, it was easy to talk to the cancilleres or the consul
yes.
because of the Spanish that they spoke. And I was able to pick up the dialect because having spoken the, you know, the Spanish
yes.
the way that I did, it was easier.
To
some
get
of the girls had a lot of problems. They could not even understand the consul. They used to tell me, how can you understand him? I said, he's speaking Spanish. And they said, well, we don't understand that Spanish. And of course, they had more problems with the braceros.
Yeah, but you learned the proper Spanish, let's say.
Because you learned, yeah, you have problems listening to the braceros because of their dialect that they speak, and you pick up a few words, and you know.
Yes.
But a lot of them were from Oaxaca.
From
Oaxaca.
You know,
from Chihuahua and Mexico, but we had a lot of them from Oaxaca, and they walked. I mean, I'm telling you, they walked from Guatemala, from Yucatan. We had some people from Yucatan coming in, and that's way
yeah, I know.
Down in the coast.
So they walk all the way through the recruiting center.
Most of the time they walk, they would get rides with people. They didn't have any money, so they would bring up whatever. They brought their money to pay, because they had to pay so much to get across. They didn't have to, but in order to get there faster, there was always
like a fee.
They always take that money. There's always somebody that's going to take that money and say, "Hey, I can get you there faster, but you pay me," you know. So they were always paying the mordida to get there faster.
To get there faster.
And some of them would never make it across. You know, they'd have to go back from Juarez or from Chihuahua, whatever, you know, wherever they would get to. They could not make it across because they had fulfilled their quota, and so they didn't need the others. And so they had to make their way back.
Their way back.
I feel sorry for them because they didn't have any money or any way to get back. The ones that got across, they had their hardships like anything else, you know. They were, some places didn't treat them as good as others, and they had their hardships, but they had their good jobs, and they were able to take some money back home. But unfortunately, when they were getting back, I understand that they would take some money. They would, you know, ask for some money as they were going back across. And so it's just a series of, you know, the same thing that's happened for years and years and years. They pay to get wherever you have to go, and unfortunately, that's it, you know.
And what was the age of the majority of the braceros that you had there?
Most of the braceros were, I think, in the 30s.
In the 30s? Mm-hmm.
Late 20s, 30s, 40s. Some of them were older, some of them were younger. Mm-hmm. But I would say 30s. Most of them had families.
Mostly families? So they usually came like in groups, either families or...
They came in groups. All the men would come in groups to work. And they were all compadres. They all knew each other you know, from an area.
Yes.
And then they were, of course, from another area. Some of them came alone or whatever. But it was... I used to try to talk to them, you know.
Yes.
And make them feel at ease, because they're very tense when they get up to contracting. They see all these typewriters and all these girls up on high, you know, and trying to type, and they know they have to go through a series of questions. And what they would do is they would get very nervous and very intimidated.
Yes.
And I try to talk to them and say, you know, well, how long has it been since you left home? And asking the questions that they would relax.
Yes.
But
yes.
I would try to make it a point to do that.
But
they would talk to me and tell me some of the stories. And
really?
Some of them were real interesting, and some would say, well, you know, I don't like to talk about it, or I don't want to know, you know, anything. And I didn't impress, but, you know, most of them, I would say 99% of them wanted to say something.
To share something
about their family. They were excited that somebody cared where they came from.
Well, it gives them the impression that it was, you know, the whole process, you feel like, it's dehumanizing since all these people and everything. So if someone really cares about you and
asks you. Somebody cares. Somebody's trying to make me feel good. I'm in a different country. I'm in a foreign country.
Exactly.
And I don't know what to expect. And, you know, somebody to talk to them and whatever, you know. And then when I was at the other office, when I was not in typing.
Yes.
When I was just processing them, you know, just separating. Because I'd separate the papers.
Oh, okay.
The contracting, I think it was four or five papers. Four or five. And we had the carbon in between.
Oh, okay. So you had to
separate those. And we didn't have that carbon paper. We had carbons in between.
Oh, in between the...
Yes. So you can imagine what our hands looked like.
Yes.
But we had to separate them and then... take a copy. One of them went to, they took off, we take a copy from them, and then they go to the next department, they take another copy.
They were able to keep a copy of their contracts with them.
They would. But the 345, they left with us. We had to file those, and they would go on to the immigration, and they would take another copy, they would process something else, you know, they would do another type of processing and process them through immigration, like whatever they had to do.
Yes.
And then they would go on, and they would go on to contracting to transportation, and then from there.
They were able to. Mm-hmm. So you have all these different copies for the different...
Different papers that would go to different places.
To different places. Perfect. And do you remember some of the stories that they used to tell you? What did they want to tell you mostly? Like about their families or...
They'd talk about their families, or they would talk about how far they had traveled, or I remember one time I was typing a contract for one of them. And, you know, like I said, they're tired. They come many times without food for days or whatever. And I remember I was typing this contract, and, you know, we were sitting up on high.
Yes.
And the typewriters, and they would come up in front of us to a certain point. And here I was typing and asking him questions, and all of a sudden I looked down and I asked him a question, and he wasn't there anymore. Huh. And, you know, it was the first time that I had done it, you know. Yes. Being 18, you know, you're young and you don't understand. And all of a sudden here I am, and I said, what happened? Where did he go? And I see all the recitals moving, all the rest of them moving, and I'm going, where did he go? And I did not understand. The man had passed out. You know, he fainted right there in front of me. You know, right in front of the typewriter.
So you were not able to see it because
it's on high. See, had it on high. They had a thing where we had to go on high, and the typewriter was sitting up high to where we were almost to their faces.
Okay.
Only, you know, we were not looking up at them. We were looking straight at them. Or down, because some of them were real short.
Yeah.
But I was typing. I remember I was going full blast and everything else. And I looked down at 3:45, and Anna asked him a question, and he wasn't there anymore. I'd been talking to him, and suddenly, you know, he was gone.
Yes.
And I'll go like, where did he go? And everybody says, he passed out. He fainted right there, you know. And after that, I realized it wasn't an everyday deal, but it wasn't uncommon to see
him suddenly
pass out, you know. They hadn't eaten in a long time. And then you have all these people crowding and lack of oxygen, whatever, and they're all like that. And of course, they haven't had a bath, I guess, in 2 or 3 weeks. So you know that humor that was just, el humor was just terrible. You know? I mean, and you have them all in one building.
Oh, no.
And, you know,
and you say in the months of August, September, you know, it's hot.
Like, you know, I guess that's why they had us on high, so that we wouldn't be at that level.
Yes.
But when we did the 3:45, we were at the level. We were there in the camp, and we would bring them in. And that was before they checked them. A lot of them had tuberculosis and had to be returned. A lot of them had, you know, different things that they had to be returned. But we had already processed them after they find out that they had tuberculosis. By the time that they go through the whole line, then they found out that they had
it. Oh, yeah, because it took a while to...
So we worked with them. You know, we were in constant contact with them.
And you never got, you know...
We never did.
Shots or...
None of us ever got. I remember I got pneumonia the second year I worked there. And I didn't know I had bronchial pneumonia. And I kept working, and I just couldn't talk. And after the contracting season was over, I went to my doctor, and he said, you had bronchial pneumonia while you were there.
And you work with...
But I kept on working. But, you know, I used to take... The girl used to laugh and say, how in the world can you eat? Because I used to eat 5-6 sandwiches and for lunch.
Really? And for lunch?
And I would get the jalapenos, the big jalapenos, and eat them like they were nothing, like they were a piece of tomato or something. They said, aren't they?
Really?
I said, no. Well, maybe that's what helped me, because, you know, I had so much fever.
Exactly.
And the jalapeno can
help you to keep it down.
Right.
Wow. But you never noticed that might be because of it.
I just couldn't breathe. I just couldn't talk, and I had trouble breathing. But I just didn't want to quit work. And then they tell me, you know, I'll take a couple of days off. You got a real bad cold. No, I don't want to quit. I wanted to keep on working. I mean, I love to work. So.
And was it a very common thing that they have, like, tuberculosis or, you know, was it like...
A lot of them did have tuberculosis.
And do you think they were aware that they have this...
We were aware, but we never thought anything about it, I guess, you know. They went through, and we were aware that there were a lot of them were sick, and we didn't know what they had, bronchitis, tuberculosis, VD.
VD.
We didn't, you know. I mean, it wasn't anything that we just frowned at. I mean, it was people that we were processing, and then after a while, sometimes they were in our line, and they would come from public health and pick them up and say, you know,
you're not
taking them. I said, what's the matter? TB. They'd go, and I'd go, because, you know, I was so excited. It felt bad. I felt bad because, not only felt bad because of their illness, but felt bad because they were going to be returned to Mexico.
Exactly.
They would be returned, and they would be given medical care. You know, they were told the Mexican government to give them medical care. But, you know, they would be sent to their homes, and God only knows what, and they didn't have an opportunity to work. But that was sad. To me, that was sad. But, of course, my problem is I'm very sensitive. I'm a very, very... very sensitive person.
It's hard.
And I used to take every one of those people that were going across very much at heart. You know, to me, it was not a group of people. It was an individual.
An individual.
And I used to feel bad for them. And some mom would say, well, I have 8 kids. And, you know, I came because, you know, we just don't have any food and everything. I said, 8 kids, you know. And of course, some of them had 2 or 3 wives, too, you know.
Really?
And they would say, you know, I don't know which wife to put. I said, are you married several times? Oh, no, I just live with 2 or 3 women. And I don't
know. Really? So they didn't know which one to put.
It was funny, one time this man came and I said, okay, what is your wife's name? He said, well, it's so-and-so. And I said, your beneficiary is your wife. Oh, no, no, it's my lover. Her name is...
So,
one time I had two guys.
So he had a different beneficiary.
The trouble is,
that's fine.
I had two guys that had the same lover. They both wanted to leave.
Really?
Because they have insurance.
But they were aware of the fact that they had the
same... They were aware. Well, they weren't aware of it, but they became aware of it while they were there. And I went like, you're leaving it to her. I said, but he just left it to her. He said, oh, he did? And I said, well, I said, you know, I...
Really?
I would go like, oh my God.
Oh God. They say, wow. But that's, you know, that's...
My querida. And I'd go like, excuse me? I said, what about your wife? And he goes, oh no, my querida, I already told her that I'm leaving her. If something happens to me, she gets my insurance.
And the poor wife and the kids were...
What about your wife and the kids? Oh no, it's okay, but I promised my lover that I was going to leave her.
Can't believe that.
Those are the stories that I used to
see. Wow,
they're interesting, you know. But it's one of a kind. I mean, you go through that and you wonder, like, you know, some of them, you know, worked hard and they, you know, my wife this and my mom, you know, some had a wife but they left everything
to their mom.
Happened to, you know, I want everything to my mom. And, and some I weren't married, you know. They say, well, you know, my mom is my beneficiary, my mom this and that, you know, stuff like that. Someone worked on it.
And they were able to put whoever they wanted. I mean, as
yes.
Okay.
As a beneficiary, they could put their dad, their mom, their neighbor, or someone put their neighbor or whatever.
Oh, someone
they
put
had, they didn't have family, so they put their neighbor or their compadre or the compadre or their godson or
daughter,
whatever they would want. You know, they weren't required to put anybody. Even though they say my wife is so and so, or you know, I don't have a wife or something. I want to leave this to my niece. Or if something happened to them.
If something happened to them. And what about the families that it came together or the group of friends? Were they able to get a contract together, you know, to
sometimes
go through...
Sometimes they tried, but there were times when they were separated. Because they, like I said, they had a quota of people and they couldn't take... Please take my compadre. And no, I'm sorry, you know, we already have our quota. Yeah. Somebody would say, well, I'm not part of that group, you know, I'm not the family.
I will like,
let him go.
Oh,
you know,
that's
straight. Once in a while, we'd hear about that. I don't know how often it happened because I wasn't out there in the selection line. But some of the times, you know, they were separated.
They
would go to different places. But they'd get together when they got back. Oh, hi, you know, blah, blah, blah. They'd go like, oh, they went to separate places and they're back.
But then they're going to be back. And
the food wasn't bad that they gave them because we ate the same food that they gave. They gave them a lot of time. You know,
and was it good?
It was good food. It wasn't fantastic food, but it was good food. You know, something that a lot of them complained of. It was garbage and everything, but it wasn't. It was good food. I mean, if all the employees could sit down and eat it, I'm sure that... And there was... Sometimes 200 of us working there, and so you know,
200 employees.
At times there was a
really
lot of employees. At times there were a lot of employees. When we were processing, Lord, in contracting alone, we had over 50 girls.
Oh,
over 50.
Over 50 girls.
Mm-hmm.
And how are the buildings that you
the time
that you work at, like the offices that you work at like there at the contracting, was it, you say you were up high, so
there was buildings, they're long buildings, mm-hmm. and if you see them, they're just long, like empty buildings, they're just long, like a warehouse, not like a warehouse, mm-hmm. but just an empty building, and then what they would put is, they would put the stands there for where you could go up there, and then they had your chairs, and then they had like a desk type, it's a long desk type from one end to the other, where they would have all the typewriters, you know, one next to the other. And then the next building was still contracting, and that's where we sorted out the paperwork.
Okay.
And some other girls, what they did is they put the forms together and, you know, put the carbons in there. And so it was different things that we did. We had two buildings there for contracting. So, but they go from inside from one building to the next.
To the next.
If you look at the building, they're connected, but there's a space in between them, I'd say about maybe 4 or 5 feet. And they would go from one building to the other.
To the other.
Mm-hmm. Those poor doors had a...
And you said that besides, you know, typing in, filling in the contracts, you also get to separate the papers and filing.
You go to separate. There's filing that you do where you put the 345s.
Okay.
Some places, some other place, you know, you'd get, by that time you get a stack. Mostly it was, we did the 345s when they would leave. Then we'd have time to put them all together and whatever. We'd find out a lot of things also when we were filing. We'd find out somebody had the same name or something, you know.
That's and someone else? Out, you know, oh, that's where you get
well, we find out sometimes in the line, but sometimes we find out after they had gone, you know, we find out through the cards and where we were finding the cards. But it was an interesting job. It was very interesting. It was my first job. And, of course, you know, when you're young, anything is... I was excited because mm-hmm. I had never worked outside the home. I had
no, that was your first job.
I had worked at the farm. My grandfather had a farm. I had worked there since I was 9 years old at the farm with him. And then we had a grocery store, which is that building next to us. And I worked there at the grocery store and stuff. And so, but it was all family business. Yeah. I had never worked outside.
It was like the first real life.
Oh my God, you know. And of course, my parents were very strict, so they didn't let me go out at all. Oh. So being able to go to work, to me, was a getting away from my parents and my grandparents and going to work. Sometimes we'd get out late, so what my grandparents used to do, they'd go park outside and wait for me till I got off work.
Oh, so they were the ones that take you to the revista and they pick you up?
They would sit there for 2 or 3 hours in the car and wait for me till I got out because they didn't want me to drive.
Really?
Sometimes they didn't get off till 11 o'clock at night, you know, when we were across
the street. Yes. And they wait for you?
At 6 o'clock in the morning and didn't get out till 11.
So you had to finish, I mean, if you have 200 people, you have to finish processing all these people.
We had time to process the Roseros to a certain time, but then we volunteered. They say, you know, how many of you will volunteer to stay over and do the 345s because we're bringing people from Chihuahua. I would be the first one to jump on. Well, I'll stay, you know, I'll stay till the finish, and sometimes we didn't finish till about 11, and I'd be coming home, you know, about 11:30. So, you know, being 18 years old and an only child and a grandchild and spoiled as I was, you know.
They took very good care of you.
Yeah, and I was very one of those that they kept real, you know, supposed to be real friendly or whatever.
And were you able to make, you know, any friendship there with the other girls that work with you?
Oh, yes, and there's a lot of girls from here that were working there, you know.
Like oh, okay, from the same area?
Mm-hmm. There was a lot of them, and I met a lot of girls from El Paso, from different areas. Socorro. As a matter of fact, after I met some other girls from Socorro, we used to ride. I used to pick them up. If they didn't have a car, I'd pick them up, give them a ride home, or from San Eli, or, you know, San Isario. And we would, and I get to meet a lot of the girls that I didn't even know, even though we lived very close. I got to meet a lot of girls from El Paso, too, that worked there. And we've kept our friendship through the years, and some of them I still talk to, some of them I still remember. Like I said, I went back. After I got married, after I had my kids, I went back on a temporary. But then I worked for transportation.
What year was that? When you came back?
The last year that I worked there in 1961.
So you were married when you
when I came back. They always call me back, and I worked there in transportation and just doing the paperwork to trying to get the people out and trying to get them on the buses. So, and I helped contracting while I helped immigration while I was there. Sometimes they'd run short of people, and I'd go in and help. And I was always the type of person that if they needed somebody, I'll help. I'll stay and do it.
You always volunteer.
Well, yeah, I always volunteer. It kept me away from home, so I always volunteered, you know, to do it. It kept me away from
home. You were a very good work.
I used to come home. I didn't go out. I mean, my grandparents were
not at all? Really?
Right before I got married, my ex-husband came in and asked my grandparents if you'd take me to the movies, and my grandfather told him flatly, he said, the day you take her out of this church, he said, you take her anywhere. He said, other than that, you leave her right here.
Really? And
that was the way it was. He just didn't do that with them.
Is he the one, you mentioned that your husband worked as a guard at the Rio Vista Center. Was he the one?
My ex-husband, yes.
Yes. Yeah. And you met him there?
We met in school. We've known each other since we were kids.
Oh.
Yeah. Families that have been here, you know, for years.
And even though your grandparents know him for a very long time?
Yeah, it didn't matter who it was. It could have been the neighbor and
there was no difference. It's not like he wasn't a stranger.
He was no stranger. His dad would come over and talk to my grandfather and whatever. But he came right there. And my grandfather would sit between us.
Really?
So, yeah. He wanted to know exactly what we were talking about and why and when.
Can you believe that? Well, the good thing is that you did get married.
I didn't know if I was 20 years old when I got married.
And you said, you mentioned that some of the employers come personally to the reception center to pick up, like, I need 50 and
Yes, they would have to go. That's the only way they could get.
Okay, they have to go in person.
From the associations, from the different associations, they would have to go to the camp and say, I need so many people. And they would have to get them there and contract. Yes, pick them up from there. Mm-hmm. Paso Valley Association was what it was.
That's the name of the Paso Valley Association. So they have different associations, and
they have the one here, they have the one from Pecos, they have the one, they had two or three from Holly Sugar. They would send representatives from Holly Sugar.
Okay.
And Lord, they had other places that they would go, but I don't remember what they were. But mostly the biggest ones were the ones from Pecos, where they pick up the cantaloupes, Holly Sugar, and the El Paso Valley
I have a question. When, let's say, Abracero went, passed through the processing center, went and finished his contract, then on his way back, he, how do you say, closed the contract or whatever. What if he wanted to come back to the United States? Did he,
No, he'd have to go back.
He had to go back.
Okay.
But if he wanted to return for another contract, let's say, did he have to, pass through the processing center?
Year?
Yes.
Yes. He had to go through the whole process again. Okay. A lot of times we had cards that I noticed there that we had that had been here for 3 or 4 years or something.
Oh, okay. Like so mm-hmm. you did have people coming?
Back. Yes. Uh-huh. Some people did come back. Not that many, but some people did come back.
Oh, okay. And what were your normal hours working there?
From 8 to 5.
From 8 to 5. Mm-hmm. And 1 hour lunch, you said?
Hour for lunch, and it was Monday through Friday.
Monday through Friday.
Most of the time. Sometimes when it was heavy, when we had to work for the braceros, when we had the contracting, the season was...
Oh, okay, the season.
Then we would work 7 days a week.
Oh, okay. Because there were many braceros
coming. Yes, we'd work 7 days. I worked, the first time I worked 6 weeks without a rest, without a single day.
6 weeks?
Constant. No days off.
But they did pay you overtime, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And they pay you with check?
Yes.
Okay.
They send you a check. They would send it to you. I think in the mail. No, they would give it to you there. But it was a government check.
A government check. Do you remember how much per hour?
Oh, Lord. I was making, what, $2 or something an hour.
Okay. And they pay you how often? Like weekly, bi-weekly?
Bi-monthly.
Bi-monthly.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any particular incident that stands out in your mind, you know, like while working there at the Rio Vista Center?
No, not really, other than that when I got sick and other than losing my...
And other than that?
The people that I was talking to.
Yes.
No, not really. We were... Most of the girls got along real good. I mean, we didn't... I didn't have any problems with the girls. I had two ladies that adopted me.
Really?
Yeah, they said that I didn't have a mother, and so they were older, you know, older ladies that were working there. They'd been working there for a long time, and they both wanted to adopt me. And then I had one man there that him and his wife wanted to adopt me. And so they call me their child, and I used to call them mom and dad. So
oh, that's very nice.
More mothers and more dads
than than anybody else. But, you were like very like.
I had no problems. I used to go to the main office and help them a lot of times to do typing. They would call me up in front and. And they treated me real nice. I don't have any complaints about the way they treated me. They were very, very nice to me. I had no problems. And like I said, there's several girls still here, you know, that work there.
That work there.
There are quite a few here in Clint, and there's quite a few in San Isidro. And in Socorro, the mom have moved away. And I know several in El Paso. I don't know if one of them was the wife of one of the firemen in El Paso, and she's...
Oh.
She's got Alzheimer's now, but it's very painful for me because I knew her real well. She was she got to be a real good friend of mine. She was older than me, but they kind of took over me. I don't know, they just kind of, I guess when they found out I didn't have a mother, for some reason they just kind of adopted me, looked after me or whatever.
Yes.
But it was real nice. I had a good time. I enjoyed it.
That's good. Yeah, so it was a great work environment being there.
I liked it. It was hard. It was different. It was not
exactly.
You
yes.
Through a lot of it, you know, you worked with a lot of people, but it's fun. It was not an office job per se, but I would dress up, you know, because I felt that, you know, at least they deserved that, you know, to dress
oh,
up.
Oh, that's very nice.
Instead of not going in jeans or whatever. And of course, my grandfather didn't let me wear jean pants, so I never.
Oh, you were not allowed.
So I would always wear my dress and heels and everything else.
You know? Oh, really? So it was like.
Yeah, and I would be standing there a lot of times all day. But it didn't matter, at least, you know.
Because, you know, I mean, inside the buildings, you was working there with high heels and dresses.
Oh,
it's not like
I loved it, you know.
Wow. But that's good. See, you see some of the ladies from the pictures, they seem very nice dressed.
Yeah. One of them's in pants and the other one's in a dress.
In a dress.
Yeah, but one of them is wearing pants. But I never did. The one on the left is wearing... Well, she's wearing a long dress at this. The dresses were long that we wore at that time.
Oh, you were wearing long dresses?
At the 50s. You know,
okay, yes,
we
there.
We're down here and everything else, but, yeah. I think that's Mary Torres on the right. And that could be Jenny Munoz on the left.
On the left?
Mm-hmm, but I'm not quite sure. It looks like her. I'm not sure that's Mary Torres. It's either Mary Torres or Maggie Managua, that girl I was 3 years telling you about.
Yes.
But I can't.
And did the brassers never...
That's before that we did. You know, that's when they have the tables. Unless... No, they were not doing the 345s for them either. This could have been... This was before my time.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what they were doing.
What they were
but
doing.
I think that that's who they are. No. This was before my time.
And did... you know, any given time did the brassers say any compliments to the girls, to the clerk typing girls? You know...
The men?
Yes, if they were very nice.
All they wanted to do was get through.
Oh.
All they wanted to do was get out of there.
I mean, they
were scared. Most of them were scared. Most of them were nervous. They didn't know what the next building was going to bring or what they were going to ask them or either going to get through or they were going to get stopped. Or and they were very nervous. So they were very, very timid. Most of the people that came, you have to realize, were from very poor neighborhoods.
Oh, okay. So they were like...
They were very poor people that risked themselves, you know, to come to work, to make it to the border cities to find a job.
Mm-hmm. What do you think were the advantages and the disadvantages of the Bracero program?
The advantages were that they were able to raise the crops as they needed, you know, the farmers were able to raise their crops because, like I said, at that time there were several wars and there were several things, you know, the reason that most of the men had to leave. And a lot of the men did not want to work in the fields or whatever. But there were some disadvantages. Like I said, a lot of them would quit work or didn't want to work and they'd take off and go back to Mexico. And there was nothing the farmer could do to hold them. I mean, the farmer was the one that would lose,
okay,
you know, in that area because, like I said, I know because of what happened to my grandfather, and that he just, once he got sick, and they would get sick for some reasons, that would get hurt for some reasons that were, they used to like to go drinking on weekends and stuff like that, so they put themselves in harm's way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was a lot of times. But a lot of times, one day, they said that they were going up a hill in Colorado,
mm-hmm.
giving up a hill, and one of the ones got smart. And he yelled fire. Well, the buses were going at 55, 60 miles an hour. And when he yelled fire, most of them were asleep in the back of the bus.
Yes.
And they opened the door. And when they opened the door to the back to exit, they didn't realize that the bus was going at full speed. And there was 4 or 5 of them that got killed.
Oh.
But, you know, things like that, mishaps that you see. But these are things that you know, you'd hear about them, but they weren't, you know, advertised for anything. But like I said, that to me, that was it. But there was a lot of advantages. I saw, like I said, some disadvantages for them to coming, for them, really, mm-hmm. because they had to chance it, like they say in Spanish, un albur, to whether they're going to make it or not.
Or not.
They're going to get contracted, or they're going to be sent back to Mexico, or they're healthy enough to stay, or they're not, or whatever. You know. And they had to watch their things very closely, you know, because... You know, as poor people, they had when they came back, they had to watch everything because somebody else would
take it,
own what the other person. You know,
okay.
The ownership would change hands
very easily.
Course, you know, but you know, it's just like anything. You have a group of people that are trying to that are very poor, and they're always trying to make a little bit from somebody else.
Yes.
You know. But I think that the people that came, most of them had a good experience. Some of them didn't. Some of them, like I said, they went to different farms where they were mistreated and stuff. And the government intervened. The Mexican government intervened. But there was good treatment and there was bad treatment.
Do you think that the Bracero program should be revived?
I don't see it coming back because now they've been replaced by the equipment, by machinery and stuff, and it's not the same as it used to be.
Mm.
It was funny because when we had the farm, they used to walk from one place to the other as long as they carried a shovel, you know, or an implement. The Border Patrol wouldn't get them. These were weapons. But as long as they didn't. So on Sundays, you'd see them all dressed up carrying a shovel from one place to another. Most of these are undocumented
workers. Undocumented workers.
They wouldn't touch them as long as they had that shovel. So it's funny because they're all dressed up to go visit somebody else, and then they have a shovel. And I'm going, they're not going to work. As long as they had it, there was their passport.
That was it.
That was it. But it's like I said, I work in the farm, and I knew the farm life here because of my dad having the farm. And of course, when I worked there, I learned their side of life. And of course, we had several listeners, and I was able to. That was before I worked with them. That I realized, you know, we had them because my dad sold the farm in '53. So by that time, you know, I hadn't seen them until I went to work, and then I realized the other side.
The other side of the story.
It was really interesting.
Is there any final comment you would like to make? Any additional lectures?
Well, like I said, I'm very sorry that I don't have the pictures, but I hope I can get them, you know, separated because they got stuck. But I do have some photographs that we took there. And I would be great, you know, if you could get a group of the people that worked there. And maybe we'd had all have reminder, you know, push each other to remember what
the stories.
I could give you some names of some people.
That will be very
in Clint and San Anisayo that have worked.
Okay.
Some of them worked only one season or what it is, just the 6 weeks.
Yes.
But some of them were there for a long time. And I know a lady there that worked as a government employee.
Oh.
And she worked there for a long time. She was our office manager.
What is her name?
Her name is CC. It was Apodaca. It's Brewster now.
Brewster.
She's the wife of one of the councilmen for Socorro.
Oh, okay.
It's the Brewster.
I'll get the names in a minute. I would like to thank you very much for
Thank you for coming, and I hope I've given you enough.
Oh, no, you did. Thank you very much.